So we are working through the book of Daniel. We have been for a while, and today we are finishing the book of Daniel. If you remember, we have been reading, basically reading the whole text of chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. Each Sunday we've been doing that. And so today we are doing Daniel chapter 7 to Daniel chapter 12. Ready? No. We are doing all of that, but I am not going to read it all. I'm going to give a summary as quick as I can of some of what is in here. This is some of the weirdest stuff in the Bible, to be blunt. Daniel chapter 7 to 12, it's apocalyptic visions. It's different than the rest of the book of Daniel in a lot of ways. So we are going to fire through all of it and then just wrestle with, okay, what does this have to say to those living in a place of exile, in a kingdom that is not God's, trying to embody the way of God? What does this say to us? Let me go through this as quickly as possible, just to give us an overview of what these visions are. Starting in chapter 7, so Daniel has a vision. This vision is of four beasts. There's three beasts, and then a fourth huge beast with horns that comes and destroys the other three. And on that fourth beast, four horns start to grow, three smaller horns, and then a fourth strong and violent horn that is boasting arrogantly. Yes, the horn is boasting arrogantly. I told you this was weird. The beasts tend to be symbols in this kind of type of literature of kingdoms. The horns tend to be symbols of kings, and so this represents a king that comes along. And so you have this fourth violent horn on this beast that's boasting arrogantly, wreaking havoc, destroying lots of things. And then in this vision, someone called the Ancient of Days comes and sets up a throne to judge. And as this Ancient of Days comes to set up the throne to judge, the beasts are destroyed. It says in the text, in the vision, that the first three are able to live. The fourth one gets wiped out. The Ancient of Days, after doing this judgment, calls this one called the Son of Man. And now that Son of Man is brought into the presence of the Ancient of Days. And then it says this, I quote, "He was given authority, honor, and sovereignty over all the nations of the world, so that people of every race and nation and language would obey him. His rule is eternal, and it will never end. His kingdom will never be destroyed." Now, most of us are probably jumping to, oh, that must mean that, and that must be about that. But it actually doesn't say in the vision who the Ancient of Days is and who this Son of Man is. And Daniel hears all of this, sees all of this in the vision, and he's troubled and terrified, and he isn't sure what it means. You see that throughout these next number of chapters, which is really interesting, because what has Daniel been doing throughout the rest of the book? Interpreting dreams, and yet he doesn't understand his own dreams and visions. In the vision, he approaches someone for an explanation. There's someone there that he comes up to someone and says, "What does all this mean?" And this is what he's told. He's told, "These four huge beasts represent four kingdoms that will arise from the earth. But in the end, the holy people of the Most High will be given the kingdom, and they will rule forever and ever." Daniel hears that, but he wants more clarification, specifically about that fourth beast. So he asks, like, what about that fourth beast? And he's told that the fourth beast is a world kingdom that's going to have 10 kings. Then an 11th king is going to emerge who will, quote, "defy the Most High and oppress the holy people of the Most High." And God's people will be oppressed by that king for, and then this is what it says, "a time, times, and half a time." Of course, it doesn't explain what that means. And this whole thing finishes with Daniel being given the assurance that about what's going to ultimately happen to that final king that is causing torment and what's going to happen to that kingdom. In Daniel 7, verses 26 and 27, it says, "But then the court," so this is the Almighty's court, "will pass judgment, and his power will be taken away and completely destroyed. Then the sovereignty, power, and greatness of the kingdoms under heaven will be given to the holy people of the Most High. His kingdom will last forever, and all rulers will serve and obey him." Then the chapter concludes with this. That was the end of the vision. I, Daniel, was terrified by my thoughts, and my face was pale with fear, but I kept these things to myself. Then it turns the page to chapter 8, and Daniel has another vision. This one no less troubling, no less strange. Daniel has a vision in chapter 8 of two animals, a ram and a goat. The ram goes running roughshod over all that it encounters until the goat comes along. The goat comes along and destroys the ram with a great horn. Eventually, the goat, at the height of its power, has the large horn broken off, and four horns grow out in its place. One of these four horns is more prominent and powerful than the others. Again, it doesn't explain it at this point. We now understand that the horns represent kings and kingdoms, okay? But the more powerful of these four horns eventually starts to devastate the temple. It stops the sacrifices from happening. It targets specifically God's kingdom and God's people. So Daniel has this vision, and then he sees two what are described as holy ones talking with each other. And they're talking with each other about how long it's going to be allowed to go on. And in this conversation, one of the holy ones says, it will take 2,300 evenings and mornings, then the temple will be made right again. So Daniel watches all this, and while he's trying to understand the vision, just because things aren't strange enough, Gabriel is sent to Daniel to explain the vision. And Gabriel explains that the ram is the Medo-Persian Empire. Now, at the time that this is set, that's not a thing yet, although we've read about when it comes in the story of Daniel. At the time when this vision happens, that's not a thing yet. So he's being told that this is going to come. Then Gabriel explains that the goat that comes along and destroys that is the Greek Empire, and that the large horn is the great Greek king, and that four other horns are when the Greek Empire will be divided. Gabriel explains that a king in that empire will be very fierce and come against, quote, God's holy people. Then he finishes with this in Daniel 8, 25 to 26. He says, he will even take on the prince of princes in battle, but he will be broken, though not by human power. This vision about the 2,300 evenings and mornings is true, but none of these things will happen for a long time, so keep this vision a secret. There's no explanation or transition about what's going to happen. It just sort of says it's going to happen, and then it says, but he will be broken, though not by human power. But it won't happen for a long time, so just stay tight-lipped about it. Nice, easy, happy dream. Daniel's response is recorded in chapter 8, verse 27. He says, then I, Daniel, was overcome and lay sick for several days. Afterward, I got up and performed my duties for the king, but I was greatly troubled by the vision and could not understand it. Again, some irony here, and the one who's been interpreting dreams just not understanding at all what he is seeing and hearing. Even when he has somebody come to explain it, he still doesn't understand it. Daniel 9. Okay, Daniel 9 starts with Daniel having learned about Jeremiah's prophecy that the exile is supposed to last 70 years. And so he hears that and starts to passionately intercede before God. God, you know, in your mercy, please restore Jerusalem. Please restore your kingdom. In response to his prayer, Daniel has another visit from Gabriel, and it's not the kind of visit he wants because it's news he doesn't want to hear. Gabriel explains that because of ongoing rebellion, Israel is actually going to endure 70 times 7 years before they're going to be restored. It's going to be 7 times longer. He then explains that after 7 sevens plus 62 sevens, a Messiah, an anointed one, is going to come and Jerusalem is going to be rebuilt. But after that 62 sevens, the anointed one will be killed, appearing to have accomplished nothing, and a leader is going to arise who will destroy Jerusalem and the temple. I am not making that confusing. It's more confusing than that in the text. Gabriel goes on to talk about the devastation and the sacrilege that's going to unfold. He says all of this stuff is going to unfold. All this horrible things are going to happen to Jerusalem until, quote, until the fate decreed for this defiler is finally poured out on him. And that's the end of the chapter. That's the end of this whole strange scene. No explanation, no clarification, just kind of dropped there. Then in chapters 10 to 12, the final three chapters, Daniel has an extended vision. It starts with this kind of awe-inspiring being coming and talking with him. Daniel actually is with other people as this being comes, and the other people with him can't see this being, but they still get afraid and run away. And so Daniel's left having this conversation with this strange man. Once Daniel overcomes his fear of this being, he's told basically about that there's cosmic conflict between powers that transcend the visible reality of this world. There's more going on than what you can see, Daniel. Then he learns about a mighty king who's raising up an army to defeat the Persians. He learns about that mighty king's realm ultimately being divided, and then about a king in the north and the king in the south, and it goes on and on about like kind of back and forth battles between the king in the north, who tends to be more powerful, attacking the south, and basically that there's this, it describes attempts at peace through marriage treaties that don't do anything. This conflict goes back and forth over time, and basically there's like a retaliation and a desire to destroy each other that overwhelms kind of the global agenda in that area for years, and everyone around it is caught in the conflict between the king of the north and the king of the south. Eventually, the king of the north is going to gain a key victory, and after gaining that victory, he's going to head home, but on his way, it says he will set himself against the people of the Holy Covenant, doing much damage before continuing his journey. He specifically targets God's people. Eventually, the king of the north is going to gain a key victory. I talked about that part. After a time, he attacks the king of the south again. He comes back to attack. But this time, the king of the south gets some allies that make it tough on the king of the north. So the king of the north kind of gets sent home not with a victory. And on the way, it says, quote, he will vent his anger against the people of the Holy Covenant and reward those who forsake the covenant. Basically, he's taking losing badly, so he's going to take it out on God's people on the way back home. So, and the text says, at this time, that his army is going to, quote, take over the temple fortress, pollute the sanctuary, put a stop to daily sacrifices, and set up the sacrilegious object that causes desecration. He will flatter and win over those who have violated the covenant, but the people who know their God will be strong and resist him. And then Daniel is told about a final time the king of the north will go on a rampage of conquest until finally someone from the east and north will put a stop to him. As this story transitions, this vision that he's being told about, it transitions into chapter 12, and this new thing is coming, Daniel is told this. Then, when this king of the north and east comes, then there will be a time of anguish greater than any since nations first came into existence. But at that time, every one of your people whose name is written in the book will be rescued. Many of those whose bodies lie dead and buried will rise up, some to everlasting life and some to shame and everlasting disgrace. Those who are wise will shine as bright as the sky, and those who lead many to righteousness will shine like the stars forever. So, when this one who has specifically been tormenting them for so long gets destroyed, things are actually going to get worse than they've ever been before. Not a great, happy thing to be told. Things are going to be harder than they've ever been. But then it says there will be, ultimately, at the end of that, there will be a rescue, an ultimate rescue, a resurrection in the end. And then as we near the end of this interaction and near the end of the book, Daniel is completely distraught. In his desire to understand, he asks, how long will it be until these shocking events are over? Let me read you the rest of the conversation, starting with the reply in chapter 12, verse 7. He's told, it will go on for a time, times, and half a time. When the shattering of the holy people has finally come to an end, all of these things will happen. I, this is Daniel, heard what he said, but I did not understand what he meant. So I asked, how will all this finally end, my Lord? But he said, go now, Daniel, for what I have said is kept secret and sealed until the time of the end. Many will be purified, cleansed, and refined by these trials, but the wicked will continue in their wickedness, and none of them will understand. Only those who are wise will know what this means. From the time the daily sacrifices stopped and the sacrilegious object that causes desecration is set up to be worshipped, there will be 1,290 days. And blessed are those who wait and remain until the end of the 1,335 days. It's got to be so frustrating for Daniel because he doesn't get any clear answers. There's going to be trials, there's purification, there's cleansing. All of these things are going to happen through these trials, or refining is going to happen in these trials, but at the same time, there's ongoing wickedness. The violence seems to go on and on from kingdom to kingdom. What hope there is offered clearly in the sense that in each of the visions, every one of the violent kingdoms is going to be brought to an end. It's going to be brought down by the ancient one in chapter 7. The violent rulers will be brought to an end, though not by human power, in chapter 8. There will be a fate decreed for the defiler that's finally poured out on him in chapter 9. And there will be a time of rescue, of resurrection and redemption for those who remain in chapter 12. But there's little to no clarity about when and how this is going to happen. Each week when we've looked at this text, we've asked the question, what message, what alternative perspective or understanding does this offer those living as exiles? Those living in a kingdom that is not God's kingdom, doesn't follow God's ways. Just three really quick notes before I get to the final verse of this whole thing. The first thing that we should be aware is that the violence, the tragedy, the horror that's perpetuated in our world that we're especially aware of because it's, well, I shouldn't say we're especially aware of it because look where we live without the violence. We aren't as aware of it as many people in the world, but we see it splashed on our news feed and our social media feeds all the time. That's not new. Exiles in every age face it. They struggle within it. They struggle against it. And we join in that struggle. But let's not imagine that it's new to us. Another thing that I think this reminds us of, or this points out, is when we get to the end and Daniel gets no answers despite his questions, I think we can learn from that that maybe this isn't meant as a timeline for us to unfold. A lot of people go to the book of Daniel and they try and like translate out all the numbers and try and drop it over timelines of history. Less than a timeline to be unfold, this is meant as a reality for us to understand and embrace, however uncomfortable embracing that reality is. We don't need to get caught up in what is kind of a church industry, trying to predict what's going to come based on trying to look back and lay out a timeline according to Daniel in the book of Revelation. There is no timeline of events that fits perfectly the numbers that exist here. And often attempting to try and do that and translate it and figure out exactly what's going to happen, we can miss out on what's most clearly taught in the book. Hey, that this isn't new, that this is a reality that we need to try and live as God's people within. Recognizing that Daniel never understood it, Daniel never gets it, and there's actually little to no attempt to clarify it for him. So maybe we can rest in that and try and figure out how to live in this hard reality. And that leads to the third thing. The purpose here isn't to give detailed clarity. It's to help Daniel. It's to help exiles throughout church history. And it's to help us have an understanding of the world that we live in and the assurance that there's something bigger going on than we can see. Even the biggest horn on the biggest beast is eventually going to be brought low by the ancient one, although not through human power. The fate decreed will someday be poured out, and we will enjoy rescue, redemption, and resurrection. So how do we respond to all this? What do we do? I want us to listen very closely to the very last verse of the text that we haven't read so far. And this is what the instructions that are given to Daniel is. He's sitting there completely confused, not understanding what's going on. He's told, "As for you, go your way until the end. You will rest, and at the end of days, you will rise again and receive the inheritance set aside for you." Let's just consider, like, there's kind of three primary things here. Let's consider them one by one. As for you, go your way until the end. It's like, Daniel, just keep living the life you have today. There's big stuff going on that doesn't change what you do today. Now, there's all kinds of global stuff going on, stuff that's bigger than even what we can see, attempt to understand, or put into timelines. But ultimately, I'm convinced that that doesn't change what we're called to do day to day, hour to hour, and how we engage with our loved ones and our neighbors and our community. There's a lot of theories out there about stuff that we can't see and worry being perpetuated, dare I say fear being perpetuated, even in Christian circles, but sometimes especially in Christian circles, about conspiracies that are going on out there, and whether you believe them to be true or not, it doesn't change our call to love the people that we're close to. It doesn't change our call to be kind. It doesn't change our call to try to do the best we can in our circle and sphere of influence. There's a strong human tendency to worry about the biggest thing that we might have some sense of awareness about. After all, the biggest thing seems to have the biggest impact. But often focusing on the biggest thing can prevent us from acting at the really practical, it's a really practical thing. The thing that actually will make a difference in our world. The thing that actually makes the deepest difference for, again, our neighbor, our loved ones, our children, our friends, even our enemy that's across the table. As for you, go your way until the end. Don't get caught up worrying about all of this big stuff that is going on that you're not going to be able to understand or do anything about anyway. Serve where you're called to serve. Love where you have the chance to love. Be present where you can be present, showing the way and love of Jesus. Go your way until the end. And then he says, and then you will rest. He's saying he's going to die. It's not the fun part to hear. Although, I talk to some people who are struggling with their health as they age, and they're kind of looking forward to that rest. They aren't rushing to get there. But there's a sense of, oh, I'm ready to rest. I love that picture for what will come. Rest. We struggle. We toil day after day. There is a rest to come. And no amount of worry and fighting against it is going to help us escape that rest. Again, we're not rushing to get there, but there is a rest. And at the end of days, you will rise and receive the inheritance set aside for you. There is an end, but that end isn't the ultimate end. We have a bigger hope, a hope that is bigger than even all of the biggest things that try to grab our attention and grab our worries and grab our anxieties and dump them on us. We've got a hope that's bigger than that. As for you, go your way until the end. You will rest. At the end of days, you will rise and receive the inheritance set aside for you. And all of the chaos of these several chapters and all of the worry that Daniel feels, I love this ending. Because it reminds us that while there's lots of big complicated things out there, most of the life we're called to live isn't really that hard. Sorry, it's not hard to, it's difficult. It is challenging to do. But it's not hard to really figure out what we're supposed to do. It's hard to actually do it. Live with the love of Jesus. Care for those around you until that day of rest and until the day that we will rise and receive that inheritance. That's what Daniel's left with after all of this. I love that encouragement for us today. Let's pray. God, we live in a world that is where we are bombarded. Unless we intentionally try to stay away from watching it and listening to it, we're bombarded with all of the bad news and the crises and the horror about what's going to happen if this person's in power, if that person is in power, and many of it in the circles of Jesus followers is meant to have us afraid about our freedom to worship, our freedom to do this or that. And God, it's so easy to get caught up in those worries. And it's so easy for those worries to prevent us from just doing what you've called us to do. To love our family, to love our neighbors as ourselves, to love our enemies, to work in the place that you've called us to work, to serve in the place you've called us to serve, and God, to keep doing that on a journey with you until the day of rest. God, help us to not get caught up, to not be distracted, to help each other to focus on, yes, but how can we love well now? How can we do, what can we do today that shows you to the world? God, so much of the rest of the stuff, it's so far beyond our control. Help us to begin to taste of that rest today as we live focused on and trusting in you. Looking forward to the day when our bigger hope will be met in you, when we will rise and receive the inheritance set aside for us. God, thank you that we can hold on to you as we go through these days. Looking forward to the rest and life to come. In Jesus' name, amen.